We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. It is week three for the Cincinnati Bengals. They're still looking for win number one. We'll get to the matchup with the Eagles later in the week, but plenty to talk about with this team. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good. I enjoyed our Cincinnati Reds conversation right before the podcast. They have a big game tonight. And then, of course, I'm into the NBA playoffs. The Lakers have a big game tonight. So it's a lot of sports action on a Tuesday.
And it feels like, you know, we finally get to actually have a lot of time to analyze the Bengals-Eagles games this week, because we actually have a long week to talk about the game. That gives us more time to watch some of the other sports as well.
Yeah, Zach Taylor actually had more time to look at that offensive lineman tape. He told us just a couple days ago, nothing's off the table. They did make a move, not a splash move, bringing in a familiar face with depth on the practice squad, Alex Redmond. When you look at this offensive line, and we talked about it last week too, I feel like if there's any moves, it's going to be internally with them, nothing major or drastic. They've been pretty set with this offensive line all offseason and have told us that. It's not the one that's going to win them a lot of games, and Joe Burrow is going to have to run for his life at times. But if you're the Cincinnati Bengals, are you making Alex Redmond active on Sunday?
So I would make him active, especially because teams are allowed 55 active players on game day. They can move up two players from the practice squad. So he would be one of the players I'd move up. The Bengals, we know, are thin on the interior of their O-line. And, you know, so I think there's a real good chance that Redmond could be on their 55-man roster come Sunday. He knows the system, obviously. He started multiple games for the Bengals in 2019. You know, he's a veteran. He's reliable. You know, he does make some mistakes. He's not, you know, a starting caliber offensive lineman, but he's somebody you can plug in there in case, you know, there are more injuries.
Two things. One, the first I think we should address is Shaq Calhoun, who the Bengals cut Redmond to claim on waivers at the beginning of training camp. With that move, the Bengals clearly showed that they believe that in the future, Calhoun can be a better offensive guard than Alex Redmond. They clearly believed that in making that move. I agree with Tyler that Alex Redmond probably is more capable of playing immediately, since he has better chemistry with the current offensive lineman and better understands the system. But also, I hope just for our sake that Alex Redmond doesn't become the next Fred Johnson. It seems like we could cycle through talking points. Well, maybe this guy can step up. Well, maybe this guy. We started with Billy Price, then he got hurt. We started with Fred Johnson, and then we saw what he did at right guard. Who knows? We might even talk ourselves into Fred Johnson at right tackle. You know, we have then Calhoun and Redmond and Akeem Adeniji down the road. I hope that, I honestly would rather see the Bengals try the guys that they believed were their best offensive linemen at the beginning of training camp than trying to bring in, you know, the hot topic of the day and just try to get change for the sake of change.
When I was talking to Pro Football Focus just a couple minutes before recording this podcast, Austin Gale told me that when you look at the offensive line, because I had him rank the guys, and he said that Jonah Williams is the best offensive lineman they have by a mile, and it's not even close. And I know a lot of people will listen to that and say, well, the bar isn't that high, so that's not really surprising. But the guy's only two games in his NFL career after being injured his rookie season. And there's some positive news on the left tackle side. You want to see that out of Jonah Williams, and you're hoping that works out. But I want to go back to Billy Price just a little bit, because one of the things we saw in 2019, and Tyler and I referenced it a lot, was the musical chairs we really saw with this offensive line, and it just felt like they never really got set, and Trey Hopkins was their best player at center. But with Billy Price, a lot of people will look at that pick and they'll look at John Ross and feel like that's a bust in the first round that hasn't worked out for them. With that high ankle sprain and it being minor, him being active on Thursday night but not going, and putting Fred Johnson in there, I just have a feeling that the Cincinnati Bengals don't trust Billy Price at the moment at right guard.
It's funny you said that. I heard from a source that the Bengals like lengthier, you know, linemen. And Billy Price, although he's around 6'3", he's kind of, you know, small in stature. You know, he doesn't have long arms. He's, you know, just kind of, you know, small in stature. So when the Bengals look at linemen. They like those lengthier guys, guys that can move around, athletic, like the Jonah Williams. Jonah Williams was a track athlete as well in high school. Fred Johnson, he's more athletic. Trey Hopkins, more athletic. So when to talk about that right guard spot, since Xavier Suofilo is on IR, you have to believe that Shaq Calhoun or Billy Price are better options than Fred Johnson. Fred Johnson had a tough time, and I'm putting it mildly, against the Cleveland Browns last week. He allowed the most pressures of all Bengals offensive linemen, gave up a sack, probably gave up another, the way you look at it. And, you know, if I was Zach Taylor, if I was Coach Turner, I would have made a change after halftime. And I would have either put Billy Price in or Shaq Calhoun. So going forward, those are my two options. If I was the coach, I would put either Billy Price in at the right guard spot or Shaq Calhoun. I mean, you claim Shaq Calhoun is your top waiver priority. You used it on him. Throw him out there. He's been at practice for a few weeks now. He clearly knows the system now. He's getting comfortable. Okay, he's been in the league since last year, so throw him in. See what he can do. So that's either one of them. That's what I would go, because Fred Johnson, he's more comfortable at tackle, and it showed in Cleveland in week two.
I think this is a moment where you can criticize the roster construction a little bit as well, because heading into the week one, definitely without a doubt, you would say their two backup tackles were Fred Johnson and Billy Price. Neither of them is a tackle. Fred Johnson is, as Tyler just said, neither of them is a guard. I'm sorry. Fred Johnson is a tackle. Billy Price is a center. So after you cut Alex Redmond, the only other guard you have on the roster is someone you brought in off waivers 3 days ago. You know, I don't want to relitigate the draft, but you have to wonder why the Bengals didn't, they did add a couple undrafted free agents, but even as a sixth or seventh round pick, adding someone who can play guard alongside Hakeem Adeniji, who projects more as a tackle. You have to wonder that at a position where even at left guard, I counted a number of missed opportunities for Michael Jordan as well. You have to wonder why they didn't address that position more heavily in the offseason.
That's the million-dollar question, Charlie, when you look at the offensive linemen. I mean, even in free agency, what they spent on the defense and realizing the holes they had to fix. But offensive linemen, they felt pretty good internally. Instead, they pick up Hakeem Adeniji late in the draft, but still it's going to be late to get some starting reps or just reps on the offensive line in general. That's to be determined on what we'll see at practice this week. Probably not a whole lot of first-team, second-team reps. We'll wait until Sunday to see what they do with that offensive line, but I don't think you can look at Joe Burrow. Even though Joe Burrow gave his offensive line credit with his 61 pass attempts, you can't look at him and say that Fred Johnson's the answer on the right side. We'll go to the receivers right now, because I think if you go to week one or just even in training camp alone, you could say the guy had a really good training camp, but it's really hard to tell until you get into preseason or maybe week two and three what a wide receiver is going to do. The Bengals went heavy at wide receiver, and that showed just this past week when they had to have a healthy scratch on Auden Tate. I know he wasn't happy about it. I know we talked about it after the game too. But Mike Thomas is currently their number three, because you can't rely on John Ross. He is healthy right now. AJ Green is healthy. He's going to be your number one. And, of course, you have Tyler Boyd out there. Are you guys surprised with him being the number three of the season so far and in the early part of the season?
Well, I think the Bengals are going to slowly transition T. Higgins into that number three role. He played 60 snaps in week two, and that was the second most among Bengals receivers. The only one who played more was Tyler Boyd, and he had three catches for 35 yards in week two. Now, Mike Thomas, he had an excellent training camp, was probably my biggest surprise during training camp. Burrow and him have a solid connection, so I expect him to get playing time as well and his reps to increase. But I do think they like T. Higgins, and his arrow is definitely pointing up. And I believe that he is slowly going to transition to that number three spot in their 11 personnel offense with AJ Green and Tyler Boyd?
I personally am just so surprised of the role that John Ross is playing. I'll dive deeper into this in my Joe Burrow's throw, five most interesting throws piece, which will be up online on Wednesday. But there was a play in the second quarter. The Bengals lined up a good creative package, were stacked inside, and Joe Burrow threw a ball about 20 yards to John Ross down the field, and the Brown safety swatted the ball out of bounds, stood in John Ross's face, took a moment, where he just kind of said, I won that play. It was one of those celebration moments. And after that, Joe Burrow really didn't look at John Ross at all. John Ross has had a number of those moments. Zach Taylor was asked after the game if he was concerned that John Ross wasn't fighting enough for jump balls like that, for contested catches like that. And this was just one example where that had been true. There are so many ways you can use him. Ross, we talked about that in the offseason, gadget plays out of the backfield, using his speed, using him as a deep threat. But the way Joe Burrow is not targeting him, is not even looking his way, shows kind of where he stands on the pecking order, to where T. Higgins and Mike Thomas are undisputably higher up on the depth chart and higher up in priority than John Ross is right now.
When you look at this team offensively, and as we mentioned, with all the weapons they have in the wide receiver room, I know C.J. Uzama's down right now, but how does this team fix the red zone woes? Because if you look at the Chargers game, you even look at the Browns game, they would have won the game if they would have fixed what they did in the red zone alone. I know they made a lot of mistakes on both sides of the ball, but how do they fix it with all of these weapons right now?
Yeah, they've been in the red zone five times and only have scored two touchdowns. That's just 30%, and that ranks 30th in all of football. One of the reasons is because they don't really have a running game right now. It's way better than last year. I will say that through 2 weeks. But Joe Mixon, Giovanni Bernard, they have not gotten going behind that Bengals offensive line. So that's an issue. And, you know, once they get in that red zone, you know, obviously the field shrinks. Defensive backs are closer to the line of scrimmage. And Bengals receivers have a tougher time separating when, you know, that happens. And, with you know, he threw a 23-yard touchdown to C.J. Uzama. That was right outside the red zone. But once they get in there, you like to see – you know, A.J. Green, you know, for Joe Burrow to look his way. He did against the Los Angeles Chargers. Unfortunately, there was offensive pass interference. Tyler Boyd has been pretty good in the red zone. Even John Ross last year, before he got hurt, he was a pretty reliable red zone target. But the Bengals just have not just been able to convert a lot of touchdowns in those five attempts, just 30%. So, you know, when – it's crunch time, and when you get in the red zone, I am a firm believer that you rely on your top playmakers. So in the red zone, that's A.J. Green, that's Tyler Boyd, and that's Joe Mixon. I am dialing up plays that they like, plays that Joe Burrow feels comfortable with, and I am looking their way. And, you know, that's what they're going to have to do to – you know, resolve their red zone woes. If they don't, then, you know, it's just going to be ranking 30th through week four, week five, week six in the red zone. And it's going to be more losses as a result to that. So they better get it fixed and fixed in a hurry.
So when I analyze play calling, I try to give the coaches the benefit of the doubt because they know a ton more about football than me. And I really believe there is intentionality behind their decisions. But the Bengals decided in that critical goal line drive against the Browns to give an outside run to Joe Mixon and to have a scramble play with Joe Burrow. And that indicates to me that they didn't think that a run up the middle would be successful. And I think that indicates a lot about how the Bengals feel about their ability to score in the red zone right now, especially up the middle. And then looking out wide, as Tyler mentioned, A.J. Green, he doesn't have a touchdown this year. The Bengals did look to him a couple times on fade routes, but the Browns safeties were just all over those. On one play, AJ didn't even really make a run for it. He just kind of let the Browns Brown safety kind of catch the ball kind of out of bounds, so it wasn't an interception. But you hope to see more effort and intensity on those critical plays, and also more of an ability to run the ball up the middle. Those two reasons And a third reason that Tyler Boyd dropped would have been a touchdown are the reasons the Bengals didn't score in the red zone much until the fourth quarter on Thursday.
It was crazy this past weekend when you looked at some of the injuries. A lot of star players are going to be out for the season, and the Bengals lose a tight end in CJ Uzama. He got Joe Burrow's first touchdown catch of the season against the Cleveland Browns. This team is starting to show that they're going to utilize the tight end position, something we didn't see last season, but we did see it from Joe Burrow at LSU. With CJ Uzama out, Drew Sample stepping up as the number one, is that a huge loss in the weapons department for this team?
I want to say it's a huge loss, but it's definitely a loss. Uzama, he was the leader in the tight end room. He was on pace in this early season to have, you know, a career year for him. And, you know, you just feel sorry for him to tear his Achilles. That is a career debilitating injury. I've even had a torn Achilles. Those are not fun at all. It takes a while to come back from that, but he's young. He's athletic. He's, you know, been healthy throughout a majority of his career. So, you know, he should bounce back strong coming back next year. But players are going to have to step up. The good thing about Joe Burrow, and what's probably impressed me the most with him, is he scans the field really well. He spreads the ball around to different receivers, to tight ends. I believe 9 different Bengals have caught passes already this year, including Uzama and Drew Sample, the two main tight ends. So without Uzama playing, you know, other tight ends have to step up, starting with Drew Sample, second round pick, Seathan Carter. It has to going to be the number two tight end in the depth chart now. And they're going to get looks because, you know, Burrow doesn't like what he sees, you know, out of his, you know, number one options and Tyler Boyd and AJ Green, then, you know, he'll check down to the tight ends underneath or the running backs. We've seen him do that plenty of times, especially because he's not averaging a lot of long throws anyways. So a lot of these throws are going to be short passes within 15 yards that are directly in front of them. And some of those are going to go to Drew Sample.
And what's ironic is that CJ Uzama caught Joe Burrow's first completed deep pass in week one, and he caught Joe Burrow's first touchdown, which was a deep pass in week two. So now the spotlight really goes on Drew Sample, who had more receptions yesterday than he had in any game at Washington as a college player. Sample had more receptions on Thursday than he had his entire junior season at Washington. Drew Sample is one of the Bengals' most discussed mid-round picks in the past 5 years, 6 years, and it ultimately now he has a chance. When you spend a second-round pick on a tight end, the expectation is that it's someone who is a quality starter if you're going to invest that much in that position, much like running back, drafting a running back early, drafting an offensive guard or a center early, drafting a kicker or a punter early. When you draft a tight end in that spot, that indicates how strongly you believe in them. So now it's up to Drew Sample. You know, Burrow clearly showed a connection with him. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and that's something that Drew Sample really changed. It's almost what could have been last season, because he did get injured in November last season when he was starting to be a little bit of part of the offense. And then this past offseason, he trained with Sam Hubbard and kind of changed some of his offseason training up. So, yeah, it's his time to shine at the number one spot in the tight end room. We'll look at the defensive side because, again, all the talk on Thursday Night Football. And, again, we've recapped all of this as far as can't stop the run, got to get to the quarterback. Carl Lawson talked about it. He said there's no excuse for not having any preseason, but he said first we got to stop the run and then we can have the fun and get to the quarterback. When you look right now, and again, we're recording this on Tuesday, the Bengals at the practice field Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday will really tell on Wednesday and Thursday what the status is of Geno Atkins. As of now, they did hit the field on Monday and he was on the rehab field. That's still a work in progress. Mike Daniels wasn't out there. He didn't practice. So you have these two pieces that you really need help with on the defensive line. And we can see that just the past 2 weeks, they need Geno Atkins back out there. How is this team going to adjust without these two guys for the next couple weeks? Because we still don't know the status of their return.
Well, their run defense is a work in progress. It's been atrocious through 2 weeks. They've given up 370 yards on the ground. That is not going to get it done. And, you know, I hear a lot of talk, well, if we had Geno Atkins or if we had Mike Daniels, things would not be like that. Well, I mean, Geno and Mike would help, yes. But if you remember last year, Geno started 16 games, and the Bengals still had the last-ranked run defense in all of football. And, you know, I really agree with what Zach Taylor said earlier in the week. You know, it's because the Bengals have bad gap responsibility and it's been poor tackling. Those are the two main reasons why the Chargers ran for 155 yards and the Cleveland Browns rushed for 200+. And when you arm tackle, when you go and corral a ball carrier with bad technique, you're going to mess up and miss that tackle. The Bengals, by my calculation, had 11 missed tackles in week two. That's not going to get it done. So it doesn't matter if you have Geno Atkins in there and they have Mike Daniels. They're not going to make all the plays. And it's incumbent upon everyone, not just the defensive line, but those linebackers and the secondary to be able to stop the run, because the tape is already out there. Teams are going to keep on pounding the rock on the Bengals until they stop it. Now, they get a little bit lucky. The schedule guys were in their favor the next couple weeks because the Philadelphia Eagles, we'll talk about this later in the week, but they're not a good running team. And, you know, they're just not a good team that runs the football. And the Jacksonville Jaguars, they just said goodbye to Leonard Fournette, and he's in Tampa Bay. So they're really not a good running team either. So the Bengals get a little bit of a break from teams that have, you know, a ground and pound, you know, run it down your throat style. But coming down the calendar, the Ravens are coming up. And if they don't get those running, if they don't get that running defense fixed and fixed in a hurry, you can see Baltimore running for 300 plus on them.
That might just be Jackson alone.
We're going to learn so much about how good the Bengals run defense is against the Philadelphia Eagles because of how banged up the Eagles offensive line is. So many players who they're starting are in positions they didn't expect to be playing, like Jason Peters, or were undrafted free agents recently, or were picked up off the street. This is a battle that the Bengals defensive line should win up front. And if they don't, then I think we'll finally be able to recognize that the defensive line is the problem. But if the defensive line does have a better game, it'll be easier to identify that it might be the linebackers that are having an issue. What's going to be really interesting about these next two games in particular are that Philadelphia and Jacksonville are poor running teams, but they have very good tight ends. Zach Ertz in Philadelphia, and as Bengals fans know, Tyler Eifert's an effective wide receiver when he's healthy on the field. So he's somebody who's going to keep the Bengals linebackers honest, even though the run game might not be able to do so as much. We'll see how effective the linebackers, the safeties, the defensive tackles are when they have to stay honest since there's a tight end who can, you know, win that matchup. While the Bengals also have the advantage in theoretically being better than the running backs and offensive lines they're facing.
You know what's crazy, though, when I hear a head coach or players talk after the game about just the tackling alone with this team, because obviously that was a huge problem on Thursday night. How do you teach a professional how to tackle? I mean, you're like, okay, you, this is how you do it. This is how you know how to do it. But how do you, as a defensive coordinator, tell them this is how you tackle a player to stop them in the professional level of football?
Oh, man.
I mean, I'm sorry.
Because, you know, it's hilarious because I hear, like, I talk to a lot of football players who, you know, played in the 70s and 80s and even – the 90s, and they're like, man, guys don't tackle anymore. The game is so soft now and not physical. It's almost like flag football. I hear it all the time. And when you ask that question, all those comments just rang in my head. And it's hilarious because, you know, when I watch NFL practices, it's really not that physical anymore. And players aren't really tackling in practice. And even when I played, you know, I feel like some of the practices I had were more physical. It's like, you know, it's, and you get why, because, you know, all the concussion issues and, you know, player safety and health. So, you know, that's most important over everything. But when it comes to tackling, it's just terrible, terrible technique. And that's really what it boils down to. Players, you know, they're literally just diving at ball carriers' ankles and knees. You hardly see like a form tackle where you wrap up and, you know, you stick your helmet in the guy's chest and drive with your hips and wrap him up. I mean, that's how I was taught to tackle. That's how everybody was really taught to tackle. But nowadays it's just like, you know, spear a guy in their legs and go for a guy's ankles and get him down. That's, I see that all the time. Or, you know, arm tackling, try to grab a guy's jersey. It's never, you know, that crisp form, you know, fundamentally sound tackles. You don't see that often enough anymore. And that's because a lot of coaches, they're not teaching anymore. And you really can't teach physicality and physical play in the NFL now because of the way the game is, you know, transforming. It's becoming a more spread out game. It's almost like a 7-on-7 game. And I mean, I can go on and on about this, but the biggest issue is players are not tackling with solid form. And you see it week in and week out in NFL.
My perspective is that the Bengals should be very good at not missing tackles, considering their personnel, considering that on the interior line, you have a guy named DJ Reader, who is a 5-year vet. He just made the highest nose tackle in football. Moving back to the linebacker group, you have a long-term vet in Josh Bynes playing alongside Jermaine Pratt, who is, you know, the youngest starter. But keep going then. On the back line, you have Jesse Bates and Von Bell, proven vets. In the secondary, you have Mackenzie Alexander and William Jackson, proven vets, playing next to Darius Phillips, a guy who's been in the league a couple years, who is playing in place of a more solid veteran in Trey Waynes. But the Bengals are old enough on defense to where you would think that they, you know, these issues wouldn't be happening as much. But, you know, there are still very big issues despite being in year two in Luan Aromo's scheme and despite having a much more experienced defense than the Bengals had last year.
Yep, you mentioned it. Still several issues. It'll be interesting if those extra days help the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll get more to the preview for week three this when they take on the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday on the road. You guys have plenty on Cincinnati.com. What's up there?
Yeah, I have a piece on T. Higgins. He's getting more comfortable in the offense, and you saw it last week. He played in 60 snaps, had 3 catches for 35 yards. And Brandon Wilson, the piece is getting a lot of love. He's been one of the few bright spots for the Bengals early on in this season. He leads the NFL in average kick return yards. He's 3 returns of over 40 yards, and that hasn't been done since the 1991 NFL season. So check out those two pieces. And, of course, I'll have a story on Joe Burrow. He's talking tomorrow. And 3 Keys, which I do every week, is coming up as well.
I will have a story up tomorrow, as always, every week on Joe Burrow's 5 most interesting throws, this time from week 2. And then check out Sunday. I'll have some advice from people who would know about how to block a number 1 overall pick and the pressure that comes with it.
Plenty of stuff on Cincinnati.com. Make sure you check it out. We'll also have a preview for the Cincinnati Bengals versus the Philadelphia Eagles. Now we have a BBP Extra with Pro Football Focus's Austin Gill. We grade Thursday's game and look ahead to the Eagles. Thanks for joining us on the Bengals Beat Podcast. We are back on Cincinnati.com. Had to bring in our guy because week 2 is over now. We look ahead to week 3. We're going to look back just a little bit to the Bengals and Browns game. PFF's own Austin Gill. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
A lot to talk about with this Bengals team. Some good, some bad. We're going to start with the bad right now. If you look at Thursday Night Football, the storyline really is going to be the defensive line. They are without Geno Atkins, some would say a future Hall of Famer. Mike Daniels adds a depth piece on the D-line, but they struggled. They can't stop the run. They can't get to the quarterback. What is going on in Cincinnati on the defense?
Honestly, I think, you know, Cleveland presented a really good opponent. You know, Jedrick Wills Jr., the Alabama offensive tackle, was playing out of this world for a rookie. They also added Conklin this past offseason that's playing well at tackle. And on the interior, Wyatt Teller and Joel Petonio are two of the highest graded guards in football right now. So it's not as much that the Cincinnati Bengals defensive line isn't getting it done, but I think it's more that they went against a really, really good opponent. I think Sam Hubbard has played above expectations so far this year. They obviously want Geno Atkins back. Carlos Dunlap has not been the pass rusher they want him to be. And Carl Lawson on limited snaps has flashed in bits. But I think, honestly, it was a tough matchup. They ran a ton of play action. Cleveland runs a ton of play action with Kevin Stefanski. And also, they really protected Baker Mayfield by getting the ball out quickly. I think more of the issues on the other side of the ball and on the offensive line for Cincinnati, that's where I see more concerns for the Bengals right now.
We're going to get to that in just a moment. But you are Jesse Bates, I'm going to say it right now, number one fan. You like what he's doing this season. How did the secondary look in game two?
I thought it looked good. I mean, Jesse Bates didn't have the game that he had in week one. Week one was incredible. I mean, he finished as the highest graded safety in week one. Playing that deep safety spot is so much easier said than done in the NFL. You have to have range. You have to have instincts. And you can't make mistakes. If you make mistakes at deep safety, they're touchdowns. You make a mistake at defensive tackle, it can be a 5-yard gain, 8-yard gain. You make a mistake in Jesse Bates' spot, and it's a big score. And he's limited his mistakes while also making a handful of splash plays. I also think that William Jackson has played really well this year. He's graded so much better than he has in previous years. He's limiting his own mistakes as well. Outside of those two, I still see some liability. They obviously need health as well. There's guys battling injuries in that secondary, Trey Wayne's included. But that coverage unit's going to struggle for as long as the Bengals' D-line can't hit home. Pass rush is so important and heavily correlated to production on the back end. I think Jesse Bates is a stud. William Jackson is playing better. But again, that defense as a unit, specifically linebackers too, though they are young and more athletic, not a lot of experience from that group. There's a lot of holes in that Cincinnati defense.
Let's go to that offensive line. When you look at just the last two games, it's no surprise they were going to struggle. You have Michael Jordan out there on the left side, Jonah Williams in his rookie year. They tried to change things up a little bit because everyone wants to see what Johnson can do. They moved him to right guard because they said Billy Price was dealing with a high ankle sprain. You still have Bobby Hart on the right side. Even Trey Hopkins, I felt, struggled a little bit in that Thursday night football game. If you were to rank those guys' performance, how would you rank it on Thursday night?
I think Jonah Williams is the best offensive lineman they have right now, and it's not close. Right now, he's the fourth highest graded player on the offensive side of the ball for this team. I think he's had lumps, but to play as well as he has along that offensive line with that offense, running so many five-man protections for Joe Burrow is honestly impressive. Like, they're not giving him a ton of chips. They're not giving him a ton of running back protection help. And what he's done practically on an island, for me, coming off a big injury, a year away from football, no preseason, is super impressive. Unfortunately, he's probably the only bright spot in the offensive line right now. Even Trey Hopkins has struggled, like you said, so far this year. But the bigger concerns, Fred Johnson, Michael Jordan, Billy Price, Bobby Hart, all of those guys in limited action so far this season have really, really struggled. So much that defenses, in my opinion, are now scheming up to attack that weakness. And when you have that coming, you can't run as many five-man protections as Joe Burrow and obviously Zach Taylor wants to run. They're going to have to protect him with tight ends and running backs in the backfield, et cetera. This is such a tough group. Joe Burrow played behind the best offensive line in college football. They won the award for the best offensive line in college football this past season. He's in quite a different experience in 2020, but it'll make him better. There are two types of quarterbacks, in my opinion, that handle pressure. People that crumble behind it, lose confidence, et cetera. And Joe Burrow, who really rallies through adversity. You saw that this past season with LSU. You saw it in the year prior as well. I think playing behind this offensive line in the long run is going to make Joe Burrow better. But eventually, if the Bengals do want to prioritize winning football games and going to the postseason, you need more talent in the trenches.
Are you surprised that they made him active on Thursday night? They're saying it's a high ankle sprain. I talked to people close with him, and they're saying that Billy Price – could have played if they needed to. I almost feel like they don't feel comfortable with him on the right side at all and just keep him as a backup center.
Yeah, right now, 28 snaps on the season, has earned a 51.7 overall grade. There are real concerns with Billy Price. He has not showed up even when healthy. And honestly, it's been a struggle to get, to develop. Billy Price has needed so much work since entering the NFL. And on the snaps he does play, he's a liability. And when the snaps he's not playing, he's battling injury, rehabbing, rather than really going back to the grindstone and getting better as a football player. He has had a tough slate to really get good in the NFL. You factor in the abbreviated offseason, no preseason. This is such a tough start to an NFL career for a center that honestly needed a ton of work going into the NFL.
One thing I've noticed, the difference between 2020 and 2019, not just the quarterback room, is this offense really trying to utilize the tight end position. We saw that with Joe Burrow at LSU, but they were using CJ Uzama. Unfortunately, he went down with a season-ending injury. They had Drew Sample stepping up, and they want to see more out of Drew with him being a second-round pick in 2019. Do you see that as a major kill in the weapon department, or is this just going to be Drew Sample season in the tight end room?
I think he's going to get fed a ton of targets, largely because they want to get the ball out quick in Cincinnati right now. And Drew Sample, his average depth of target is probably going to be under 6 yards, but he's going to get a ton of targets this upcoming year. And also, I mean, in this season, but I also am really impressed with what Joe Burrow and the comfortability he has with AJ Green. Right now, according to PFF's expected fantasy points tool, which models kind of expected points and expected yards based on air yards and different things, AJ Green is in the lead, you know, in terms of having – you know, the most expected fantasy points so far this year because Joe Burrow is pushing the ball downfield to AJ Green. They haven't been able to connect. He's had some bad matchups. Denzel Ward was, you know, in his back pocket for most of that Thursday night game. But I think AJ Green staying healthy, Drew Sample has to step up in a big way, but AJ Green staying healthy is way more important, and him getting more comfortable, Burrow specifically, with Tyler Boyd and John Ross. Because right now, the only comfortability I see is with AJ Green. He's still trying to find and work his way to getting comfortable and more interested in throwing the football to Tyler Boyd and obviously John Ross.
Wait, so you're not going to tell me that AJ Green looked washed up in game two because he didn't make some of those completions? AJ Green is going to be okay? Is this what you're saying to everyone?
AJ Green's going to be fine. I mean, as long as he stays healthy. Like, if AJ Green stays healthy, he's going to be fine. He's not washed up like some might be able to say about Drew Brees right now. AJ Green actually looks good for his age. I honestly think that he's going to face better matchups. Eventually they're going to be able to run some longer development plays. If they lean more on play action, that is honestly a huge storyline for the Cincinnati Bengals right now. When you're running so many, you know, five men on a route, you're not able to run play action as often. You don't have a back in the backfield to have that action flowing. And honestly, Joe Burrow has played so much better on play action. The offensive line has held up on play action. If they can call more of those plays, specifically on early downs, I think you could see the Cincinnati Bengals finally push the ball downfield with success, with AJ Green included in that equation.
Are you surprised? Because you and I, we've talked this offseason about the loaded wide receiver room. I mean, you're their hype man right now when you think of some of those weapons that Joe Burrow does have in the wide receiver room, and they decided to go 7 this season. They made Mike Thomas active over on tape in this last game. And Mike Thomas has really had this chemistry connection with Joe Burrow. He even had one of his touchdown passes. Are you surprised that he might be the number three going into week 3 and 4?
Honestly, no. And Auden Tate is someone I wrote about a lot this past year, and I think has a lot of, you know, fans. He's a big-bodied receiver that's good in contested catch situations, but that has a lot of volatility. Unless you can create consistent separation in the NFL, you're going to struggle to produce consistently. And Mike Thomas, as you saw this past week, can actually create on the intermediate and deep route tree. And I think that is really surprising for probably a lot of Bengals fans, but I wouldn't be surprised if Mike Thomas continues to see more snaps than Auden Tate. And he is that receiver that's working with Boyd and obviously AJ Green as T. Higgins kind of comes up to speed.
Joe Burrow, we got to talk about the guy, the way he's looked in the last two games. I know nobody wants to use the excuse, no preseason games, no OTAs, but he's keeping the Cincinnati team in games and he's showing he's the real deal. Have you been surprised? And what's he looking like over at PFF?
I think the positives right now with Joe Burrow is that he's very calm under pressure and very confident with the football. You know, being the quarterback is part of it. You know, you see quarterbacks enter the NFL and don't have the confidence to make some of the throws he's making, don't have the confidence to stay composed in the two-minute drill and trying to put, you know, win football games. I think in week one you saw that, and in week two. You ask a rookie quarterback to throw, what, 61 times in a single game? 9 times out of 10, that rookie quarterback's going to crumble. And Joe Burrow looked cool, calm, and collected that entire game. The cons right now, I do think arm strength is a concern. It was something that people highlighted as, you know, that's not his MO. He doesn't have a ton of arm talent. He's not a Kyler Murray or Patrick Mahomes. And on an NFL field, some of the throws that you could make at college aren't there in the NFL when you don't have the arm talent that, you know, like Joe Burrow doesn't. And also, the other thing I'd say, he's still making some college-y rookie decisions. You know, the two, like, flips in week one against the Chargers were a bit concerning, and then against the Browns as well, just some kind of boneheaded decisions to where that ball isn't going to be completed in the NFL. It's not the same as the collegiate level. So I think he still has so much room to grow, so much to learn, but the game is not too fast for Joe Burrow. And I don't think it's going to get faster for him. He's going to continue to gain experience and be more confident as the games progress because offensive line can hold up. heavy dose of play action. I think that's on Zach Taylor to get involved. And the receiving corps can stay healthy. Eventually, you'll see this thing turn around. I remember talking about the Bengals before the season. I said, don't be surprised if things are rocky to start. And things are rocky to start. But there are a lot of positives to pull from both games so far this year, positives that they hope can, you know, stack as the season progresses and Joe Burrow finishes in a really good spot.
All the talk this week right now, nationally and locally, is Carson Wentz and the Philadelphia Eagles. Both teams are winless. Is this a winnable game for the Cincinnati Bengals, or is Carson Wentz going to get it together?
Oh, buddy, it's definitely a least winnable game. I mean, Carson Wentz right now is the lowest graded quarterback in football, according to PFF. He is also the least accurate quarterback in football, according to PFF. He has really struggled. The offensive line isn't good in Philadelphia. The receiving core is banged up a bit. You know, obviously you had the rookie, losing his name, the TCU guy, my favorite, Jalen Reagor, battling injuries a little bit. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside has not lived up to expectations coming out of Stanford. And additionally, the defense banged up in the secondary, you know, not necessarily struggling to get a pass rush, but it's not enough to kind of keep teams at bay. I'd be really surprised if this game was a blowout on the Eagles' side. I think it's going to be close no matter what. Obviously, Carson Wentz, I think I give the advantage over Joe Burrow because of the experience and where he is. But it's going to be similar, in, I think, in terms of that Bengals-Browns game, and that Burrow's going to keep them in it. If, you know, the Bengals' defense can step up for once and keep Carson Wentz from the end zone a few times, I think it'll be close.
You guys have plenty of stuff up on PFF. What are you up to, and what can fans check out?
Yeah, go to PFF.com. Right now, a lot of the effort right now is looking at the quarterback play. Steve Palazzolo does a quarterback column every Wednesday looking at a review. Josh Allen is playing better this year. Mitchell Trubisky, I think, is a top 10 graded passer. Kyler Murray on his way to an MVP. And on the opposite side, is it time to pull the plug on Dwayne Haskins? Is Carson Wentz not the guy? Derek Carr stepping up too this year. I mean, this past just last night, Derek Carr looked very good. I think the quarterback storylines this year, Aaron Rodgers' revenge tour. There's just so much going on at the quarterback position. Finally, you're seeing the old guard, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, not necessarily in the media. It's these new guys and these younger guys that are really stepping up. So I think come check out PFF, the grades, the stats, fantasy football, betting information, everything you need if you watch a ton of football like me.
Austin Gale, PFF, always good stuff all season long. Thank you for joining us. And week 3 is here. Can't wait to check your guys' stuff out.
Thank you.